Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kufavim at Aleph, three lines down. Ki'ata Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, Amar Maimar Rishonim, a lack of Maimar Rishonim, Hechilu Basar Chazir, caused someone to eat pig, Achronim, a lack of Maimar Achronim, or the practice of Maimar Achronim, Hotziu et Aisha Mibala, caused a woman to be divorced from her husband. Ki'ata Ravin, when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, Amar Rishonim, Hechilu Basar Nevela, that the Maim Rishonim caused someone to eat Basar Nevela, Achronim, a lack of Maim Achronim, Hargu et HaNefesh, caused someone to be killed. Now, the reference here by both Rav Dimi and Ravin is to a story that's brought in the Gemara in Yoma with regards to Kidor, and which is found in other Midrashim, including the Midrash Rabo by Balak Chaf Chof Aleph. The lack of Maim Rishonim was there was an individual who used to feed his guests food based on their religious practices. If he saw someone come in and wash Maim Rishonim, then he would know that they were Jewish and he'd only provide them with kosher food. On the other hand, if he didn't see them wash Maim Rishonim, he assumed that they were not Jewish, and he'd either give them, depending on the version of the story here, Basar Chazir or Basar Nevela. And it happened to be that a Jew came in one time, he did not wash Maim Rishonim, and therefore he assumed that he was not Jewish, and gave him non kosher meat. And that's the reference here too, either Hechilu Basar Chazir or Hechilu Basar Nevela, because the person was not makpid, he wasn't careful about Maim Rishonim. And the Marsha claims that the reason he was able to sell non-kosher food was because it happened to be that in his working with the meat, he sometimes had things that became trefot nevelot, and therefore he served it to the non-Jewish customers who were okay with that. And since they didn't specifically ask for kosher food, he was able to serve them that item without it being deceitful. The Beit Yosef, on the other hand, claims that the whole story takes place in the time of Gzeret HaShmat. And this was a way to cover for kosher food, meaning that the siman to give a person kosher food was washing Maim Rishonim, and otherwise he was serving not kosher food because of the Gzeret HaShmat. The story with regards to the Maim Achronim is a story with an individual named Kidor who was dishonest and hosted the Tanaim, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda deposited their valuables with him for safekeeping. He ended up stealing them. And then there's a story that plays out in which they are, through his lack of Maim Achronim, figure out what he ate for dinner. And since they know what they ate for dinner, they use that as a secret code to get to his wife to find out from her where he stores all these items that are stolen. And they therefore get their money back and get that which they deposited with him back. When the husband gets wind of the fact that his wife gave up the information, there are two versions of the story. Either he divorced her or he killed her. So those are the stories that are brought up here, both about the importance of Maim Rishonim and Maim Achronim, that there are severe repercussions, not just for not keeping the mitzvah, but there are other ramifications if one does not perform Maim Rishonim and Maim Achronim. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak v'Simanich, the way to remember which of the Amoraim, Rav Dimi and Ravin, tell the stories over here, Ata Rav Dimi Afko. Rav Dimi came and said she was divorced. Ata Ravin, then Ravin came and Katla, he killed her. Meaning that, of course, if she killed her already, she can't be divorced. So divorce has to come before killing her. And as Rashi notes over here, they knew that Rav Dimi had come from Eretz Yisrael before Ravin. And therefore, the first one to come with Rav Dimi, Afka, was the one who says that he divorced her, Kidor. And Ata Ravin, when he told over the story of Kidor, says that he had killed her. Rabbi Abba matni chad mehani v'chad mehani. Rabbi Abba had a compilation of the two versions of Rav Dimi and Ravin lechumra, that both of them were the chumra. According to Rashi, that means that in the Maim Rishonim case, it was basar chazir, which is more chamor than the vela because it has two isurim versus one isur. And then in the latter case of Maim Achronim, the outcome was that he killed her and not that he divorced her. Those are the two versions of the story according to Rabbi Abba. Itmar. Now we have another machloket amoraim with regards to Maim Rishonim. Chameha or, something that's heated up by fire, meaning that it's something that is heated water. Chizki amar, einot li mehen li yadayim, you can't use them for washing one's hands for Maim Rishonim. V'yochanan amar, not li mehen li yadayim, you can't use them for Maim Rishonim. Now, Rashi over here makes a important comment, which Tosafot is very bothered by, which is, you're not allowed to use them for Maim Rishonim. Rashi says, Polig Adila'el. This statement of Chizkiah argues on the Braita that we brought before, which differentiated between Maim Rishonim and Maim Achronim, and that Braita said that for Maim Rishonim, one can use water that is heated up, and therefore Rashi says that Chizkiah is arguing on that Braita, and Chizkiah is a Tano. which is, makes it very unusual, because then you have Chizkiyah Tano arguing with Rabbi Yochanan and Amora, but Rashi does that in order to avoid the problem that Chizkiyah is against a Braita, and the only way to fit Chizkiyah into the Braita is to say that he's a Tana and arguing on the Braita. The Baal Tosafot here take a different approach and say that Chizkiyah Muki Kalishna Kamo de Rabbi Yanai Le'el. Remember that we brought the Braita before, and then we had a modification of a qualification of it by Rabbi Yanai. That qualification had two versions. The first version where it was on the Reisha, on the Maim Rishonim, and the second one where it was on the Maim Achronim. Given the differentiation, we said the nafgamina between the two versions of the qualification were, if you believed it was on the Reisha, then even Maim Rishonim could not have Yad Soledet Maim be used. The heat of the water reached a point where the hands recoil, you would not be able to use it for Maim Rishonim. According to the second version, that was true by Maim Achronim, but Maim Rishonim, you could even use water that is Yad Soledet Bo. So all Tosafot says is that Chizkiyah holds like the first version of Rabbi Yanai, and therefore he says that when the waters are not Yad Soledet Bo, that's when you can use them. And that will explain the Braita. Over here, we're dealing with the case of Yad Soledet Bo, that it's a case where it's already reached the point where it's so hot that the hand would recoil from it, and that's why Chizkiyah argues over here. So all the Baalei Tosafot say is that Chizkiyah can just explain the Braita according to the first qualification and not the second qualification. Rashi thinks, given that we accept the second version in the halacha, that he says that Chizkiyah must be arguing on that second version, must mean that he is a Tano in order to argue on the Braita over there. That's the difference in the view of the Baalei Tosafot and Rashi as to what exactly the case is over here in terms of Kameh Ur, and what is Chizkiyah's view then vis-a-vis the Braita that we saw in yesterday's daf. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Sha'alti et Rabbi Gamliel, Benoshrab Rabbi. So Rabbi Yochanan says, I spoke to Rabbi's son, Rabbi Gamliel, Bochel Tarot, and he happened to be someone who eats Tarot, and therefore he is always Mikadesh himself, Amar Li. And he told me, Kol Gdole Galil Osimkein, that all the leaders, all the great ones, all the Tamidei Chachamim of the Galil, they use hot water. Now, it's an unusual statement of the Gemara, and that's why some of the poskim are a little bit circumspect about the halacha here, because it sounds like if you read the Gemara according to the way that Baalei Tosafot suggests over here, we're speaking about waters that are Yad Soledet Bo. You know, waters where the hand recoils from it. And that's the case now that Rabbi Gadol, the son of Rabbi, is testifying to Rabbi Yochanan that everybody in the Galil used water that was Yad Soledet Bo. Why would they go out of their way to use waters that were boiling hot and wash their hands in that manner? It's one thing to say that it's okay to use that water. It's another thing to say that they intentionally always use that type of water. And therefore, there are those that believe that the situation here cannot be speaking about something that is Yad Soledet Bo, but more likely is speaking about a case of something that was either heated up and then cooled down afterwards, or was speaking about a case of something that was heated up, but not to the point of Yad Soledet Bo. Because that would make more sense when it comes to this statement of Rabbi Gamliel ben Osher Rabbi that Kol Gdolei HaGalil have such a practice. Chamei Tveria, when it comes to the hot springs of Tveria, Chizkiyah Amar Einot Li Mehem Liyadayim, you can't use them to wash your hands. Aval Matbilin Behenet Liyadayim, what you can do is dip your hands in them as if you're going to the mikveh, which is that when a person has to be metaher their goof in the mikveh, they need to go and submerge their body totally into the mikveh. On the other hand, we allow, or the dispensation is with regards to Yadayim and being Meteher Yadayim, which is an institution midrabanan. Over there, we allow you to do washing of your hands. What Chizkiyah is suggesting over here is that washing one's hands is a kula. And therefore, if you were to do Tvila, you would actually dip your hands in the mikveh. That would be even better way of being Meteher yourself than doing Netilat Yadayim. And so therefore, even though one cannot do Netilat Yadayim with regards to the Chamei Tveria, one can do tevilat yadayim in the chamei teveria. Rabbi Yochanan amar kol gufo tovel behem, aval lo panav yadav reglav. Rabbi Yochanan says you can only use the chamei teveria to be metaher your whole body if you need to go to the mikveh. What you can't do is put in your hands, your feet, and your face in there. These are a group of words that are always brought together. But over here, for our purposes, the only thing that matters is yadav, that he can't put his hands into the chamei teveria to be metaher them. Hashta kol gufo tovel behem panav yadav raglav lo kol shekein. So the Gemara here tries to understand Rabbi Yochanan's position. If the waters are sufficient to allow you to go to the mikveh and be mitaher your whole goof, why aren't they sufficient for you to be mitabel, to put your hands in there and be mitaher your hands? And as Rashi brings over here from the Mishnayot and Taharot and the Gemara and Chagiga, it's pretty clear that tevilat yadayim is more efficacious than netilat yadayim. So therefore, why would Rabbi Yochanan disagree with Chizkiyah in this instance? So Rapapa. So Rapapa now narrows the machloka between Rabbi Yochanan and Chizkiah, which is Bimkoman, if they are in the place where they pool, meaning the area where the spring or the hot spring is, in there, the Kuliyama lo plige de shari. Everybody agrees over there that it works. Meaning if you do Tevilat Yadayim in that area, that is sufficient. According to Rashi, that means that there's 40 sa'ah in that location, sufficient to be a mikveh, but it's at the point of the source. Over there, everybody agrees that that works in terms of Tevilat Yadayim. Mishka minayu bimano, if you take out the hot springs with a kli, the kuliyama lo plige de asir. Everybody agrees over there that that doesn't work because that is netilat yadayim. And as Rashi brings over here, the chi tikun rabbanan netila la bechamin tikun. When the rabbanan instituted netilat yadayim, they didn't do it or didn't allow it with hot springs. Behane griye mechameor. And these are even worse than stuff that's heated up by fire. Shloit aylem shata kosher. They never had a moment where they could have been kosher. Water that's boiled up, at least there, at one point, it was okay for netilat yadayim. Question is, does boiling the water then detract from the fact that it was kosher at one point? But by chamei tveria, from the outset, they were never good because they reached the point of boiling immediately, and therefore everybody agrees over there that if you take them out of the chamei tveria, they're not subsumed in the takanat chachamim of netilat yadayim. Kiplige, they argued the paskinu bebat birta. It's in a case where there's a channel that takes some of the water off to the side. So in the pooling area where the side pool is, there is waters from the chamei tveria. They are connected back to the source of the water, to the bigger pool where there is 40 sa'ah. But in this particular area, there is not 40 sa'ah in that area. Mar savar, gazrinin bat birta atumano. Rabbi Yochanan believes that where goes there, this bat birta, this side waterway, because we're fearful if we let you do that and take it off a side channel, then you also then take it out of the main pool with the kli, and that everybody agrees is problematic. Umar Sabar and Chizki says, lo gazrinan. We're not worried about that, and therefore you're allowed to dip your hands in there and be metaher them in that fashion. So everybody agrees technically it works because it's attached to the main pool. Then the question is, because this is a side pool or a channel that comes off the main pool and in itself doesn't have the waters that would be sufficient for a mikveh, even though it's attached and connected back to the source pool, which does have sufficient water. Question is, how do people view that side pool? Do they view that side pool really just being an extension of the main pool, and therefore they realize they're going into a real mikveh and not doing something like netilat yadayim? Or, according to Rabbi Yochanan, we're worried that people will start to think of that as a taking of the water out of the main pool and putting it into this side pool or into this channel. And what's the difference between going to the channel and taking it into a kli from the main pool? And then people will then use a kli to do netilat yadayim with the chamei tveria, whereby both Chizki and Rabbi Yochanan agree it would not work, it would not suffice for netilat yadayim. Now Tosfot points out over here that in the Gemara Nazir, it says that the truth is that mem sa'ah is only a requirement or a minimum requirement of a mikveh for a person to be metaher on themselves in it. But for smaller items, then you don't need to have a full mem sa'ah in order to be metaher them. So for instance, for small kelim, you could just have a revi'at log of mayim, and that would be sufficient as a mikveh. Gemara Nazir says the revi'at mikveh batle betlua, that they eliminated the possibility of using that as a mikveh, and therefore they said that a minimum of mem sa'ah is needed for all types of things that you need to put into a mikveh. So Tosfot, in trying to understand this, the paskinu bebat birta, that they go off to a side channel, how does that relate to this issue of revi'at log being used for mikveh? So he says that there are two possibilities, that even though they eliminated the possibility of using this for a kelim in a mikveh of less than 40 sa'ah, nevertheless, shari lahitbil bahem yadav. They did allow you to still use it for tevilat yadayim, or inami, the gami batua. Or maybe even we believe that they eliminated it completely, afli yadayim, even for netilat yadayim, v'hocha b'mechubarim. But over here, the channel is connected to the main body of water, which means that Tosafot really is giving two possible explanations as to what bat birta is. We explained it, according to Rashi, and Tosafot's second explanation as being attached to the main pool. And that's what facilitates your ability to use it as a mikveh, even though it itself doesn't have 40 sa'ah in it. On the other hand, Tosafot brings an alternative view that the bat birta is a pool that's not attached to the main section. It's a pool that gets filled when it overflows the other pool, or when the water gets pushed over, but it's not necessarily attached. And this is functioning like a mikveh d'oraita, which does not require 40 sa'ah, just sufficient amount to get the entirety of whatever it is into the waters. And therefore here, when you put your hands in there, it'll work as a mikveh midoraita, and they were not gozer that it doesn't work. But then you can understand why people would confuse that with a kli, because here where it's detached from the main pool, and it's sitting in its own pool, how is that different than putting it into a kli? The answer is that this is a mikveh midoraita. They putting it into a kli will no longer be a mikveh midoraita. And that's why there goes there, kelim, to this badbirta. Okay, Gemara says, ketanae. This machloket between Chizki and Rabbi Yochanan is similar to a machloket tanaim that we have in the Tosefta of Yadayim. Maim shenifsilu mishtiat behema. If you have waters that are no longer potable for animals, bikelim, if you use them to wash in kelim, psulim, they're problematic. Bikarko, if they're in the ground, ksherim, then they're fine. And once again, Rashi notes over here, of netila, lo tiknu rabbanu la biruim lishtiat behema. That when it comes to netila to Yadayim, the Chachamim only instituted using liquids that are potable for animals to drink. If that's not the case, then you can't use it for netilat yadayim. There is no such restriction with regards to tevila. It only exists by netilah. Tosfot does point out there seems to be an inconsistency between our Gemara here and the Gemara in Zbachim as to whether mikveh water that is not ruah oil, l'shtiyat beima, is qualified to be a mikveh, where our Gemara says yes, but the Gemara in Zbachim seems to say no. And Tosfot differentiates the cases and says the reason that the waters in Zbachim are disqualified is not because they are not drinkable, but because they are so thick that they are mixed up with sediment and dirt and other things in the water that makes it so thick that the animal can't drink it, and therefore it no longer even has a shame mayim alav. It's not even called water anymore. And over there, that's disqualified not only for netila jadayim, but it's also disqualified for being used as a mikveh. Whereas over here, we're dealing with waters that are clear, are not thickened by that which is in them, but they're just putrid, or there's something that makes them undrinkable for the animal. Those are still qualified to be used as a mikveh, even though they're not potable water for the animals. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, af bekarka tovel behem kol gufo. If they're in the ground, you're allowed to go in entirely with your whole body as a mikveh. Havelo panav yadav viraglav. But you can't use it for your face, your feet, and your hands. Again here, panav yadav viraglav are a threesome that are always brought together. What's important to us over here is yadav. Mara asked the same question on the position of Rabbi Shimon Elazar as we asked on Rabbi Yochanan before. Hashta kol gufo tovel behem, panav yadav viraglav lo kol shikain. Then if you can be mitaher your entire goof in this water, then certainly you should be able to be mitaher your hands by putting them into the mikveh. Elav de paskinu bebat birta. Must be that the case here in the Tosefta in the Yadayim is similar to our case of here, in which there is a charitz that carries the water over to a secondary pool. Again, the Bali Tosafot would say the same thing, whether it is still attached, the way that Rashi explained it, or maybe it's even detached from the main pool. Ubaha plige, and the machloke tanaim over here, similar to that of Chizki and Rabbi Yochanan, the marasav gazrin bat birta atumano, Shimon ben Elazar, like Rabbi Yochanan, is goes there in the bat birta, that we shouldn't come to do it with a kli, where it would be problematic. Marasav lo gazrin it, and the Tanakama, as well as Chizki, I believe there is no need for such a gzera. For something that's in the ground, people understand, functions differently than something is in a kli, and they won't confuse if you allow them to do it in a bat birta, that then they're permitted to do it with a kli. Amar Rav Yidi Ba'avin, Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Shian, Netilat Yadayim L'Chulin, Mipnei Tzrach Truma. The reason that we have to do Netilat Yadayim by Chulin is because of the problems that could arise by Truma, which is that we have a Takanat Chachamim by Truma, that Yadayim have a classification of L'sheni L'tum'ah, and therefore anybody who eats Truma needs to wash their hands before they eat Truma in order to take away that level of Sheni L'tum'ah. Now Sheni L'tum'ah is only effective at rendering Truma psula because there is such a thing as a Shlishi L'tum'ah by Truma. By Chulin, the end of the line is Sheni L'tum'ah, and therefore if you're Yadayim or Sheni L'tum'ah, they have no impact by Chulin. So technically, washing your hands for chulin is a meaningless act because of the fact that it's already something that does not affect chulin because you're only a sheni l'tuma. On the other hand, for truma, it makes sense to wash your hands because if you're a sheni l'tuma, it'll affect the truma and make it into a shlishi l'tuma. So in order to deal with that problem, again, a problem that's already generated by the chachamim because yadayim are askaniyotayim, and therefore we worry about them coming into contact with the tumah, either tumah dirabanan, Or even if it's Tuma Doraita, washing one's hands will remind the person that they came into contact with Tuma, and therefore they demanded that you wash your hands before you ate Truma. And now what we're saying is that the reason that you have to wash your hands by Chulin is to reinforce that institution with regards to Truma. And that's what Rashi explains over here. In order to reinforce the Gzeirah and to make sure that people who ate Truma did this, they force people eating chulin also to do this, because if you make it an institution that has general acceptance in the population, then not only the people eating truma, who are the kohanim, would have to do it, everybody would have to do it. That would reinforce this even for the kohanim themselves, and therefore the kohanim would wash their hands all the time. So that would help, either because they're eating their chulin al tarata truma or tarata kodesh, or because if we have everybody washing for chulin, that will cause the kohanim to wash when they're eating truma, and they won't feel like it's some sort of small institution with regards to them, and then disregard it. Ba'od, and another reason we wash Mayim Rishonim is Mishum Mitzvah. My Mitzvah. What does that mean? That we're doing it because of a Mitzvah. Am Rabbaye, Mitzvah, Lishmoa, Divrei Chachamim. Because it's a Mitzvah to listen to the Chachamim, since this is an institution of the Chachamim, it's a Mitzvah to do what the Chachamim say. Now tell us what it says. Well, once you've instituted it because of Strach Truma, then what is the other institution that you're speaking about here that the Chachamim said to do something, and it's a Mitzvah to listen to the Chachamim? Now you could argue, Mitzvah to listen to the Chachamim in this matter of Strach Truma, even though again it's not inherently for the Chulin that you're eating, nevertheless we listen to the Chachamim because of the problems of Strach Truma. On the other hand, Tosafot offers that there might have been a secondary aspect to the Mayim Rishonim, which is a matter of Nikiyut, that they instituted Mayim Rishonim not only for Srach Truma, but also for one to cleanse their hands prior to eating food, and that's what the Mitzvah Lishma Divrei Chachamim is in this instance. Rava Amar, Rava on the other hand, presents this slightly differently and says, Amar Mitzvah Lishma Divrei Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. It's not a Mitzvah Lishma Divrei Chachamim, rather a Mitzvah to know the limud, or the drusha, of Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, which actually, according to Rashi, elevates it to a din d'oraita, dichtiv, because it says by the zav, kol eshe yigah bo azav, viadav lo shataf b'mayim, anything that the zav comes into contact with, and he has not washed his hands in water, amar Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, mikan samchu chachamim netilat yadayim min haTorah. This is the source, according to the chachamim, for netilat yadayim in the Torah. Amar lei Rova the Rav Nachman. So Rava asks his Rebbe, Rav Nachman, my mashma, how do you learn that out of the pasuk? Dichtiv, yadav lo shatap mamayim. From what it sounds like in the pasuk is, the reason that the zav conveys tuma is because yadav lo shatap mamayim, because he didn't wash his hands. Hashatap, had he washed his hands, tahor, he would have been fine. Hat vilo boy, why do you mean? Why would washing his hands suffice over here by the zav? He needs a full tvila. His whole body has to go in the mikvah in order for him to be tahor. Eliyachi gamar. This is what the pasuk means. Vachar shaloshataf tameh. Not only is the zav problematic, but also someone else who doesn't wash their hands has the same din as this zav, which is that they have the capacity to make things tameh. And so there are really two things being mentioned in the pasuk. You have the zav, who because of his inherent problem causes tuma, and then you have someone else who didn't wash their hands also causes tuma. And that is the hint to this, min haTorah. So now Rashi, over here, when he quotes this, says that Rava is saying, doraitahi mitzvah, that it's actually a Torah-ordained principle, and not a rabbinically ordained mitzvah. That's what the suggestion of Rava is. And then, when Rava queries of Rav Nachman, what is the limud over here, Rashi seems to backpedal on that and says, vasmachta ba'amahi. It's not a real limud mi doraita, rather asmachta. So for Rashi, the progression of the Gemara is that Rava makes this statement that it's a din d'oraita, but then when he clarifies with Rav Nachman exactly what the limud is, it seems to be that it falls back to being an asmachta, just a hint min haTorah, but it still is a rabbinically ordained mitzvah. On the other hand, the Baalei Tosafot from the outset say that. They say, perish, tasmich lekra, t'lav drosha gimura. In that mitzvah lishmoa, divrei Rav Elazar ben Arach, is not to say that it's d'oraita from the outset, but rather, it's that it's a mitzvah to know the drasha of Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, who elevates the status of Netilat Yadayim to an asmachta min haTorah, rather than simply an institution midrabanan. So Tosafot from the outset believes that it's just an asmachta. The Rashi at the outset seems to say that Robo was even indicating that it was a din d'oraita, until he clarifies that limud from his Rebbe Rav Nachman. So now, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Boshaya, lo amru Netilat Yadayim the perot, elam mishum nikiyut. That the only reason one has to wash their hands in order to eat fruits is not because it's halakhically ordained, but rather because it's sanitary. And therefore, the reason that one washes their hands before eating fruits is to make sure that their hands are clean. This might be what Tosfot was hinting to in the aspect of mitzvah, lishma divrei chachamim, that netilat yadayim has two aspects to it. It has an aspect of nikiyut, of cleanliness, and something that is also sanitary. But beyond that, it also has a tzad kedusha to it, which is it's able to remove a tumah midrabanan. On the other hand, when it comes to peirot, peirot only have one of those two aspects. They have the aspect of nikiyut. They don't have the aspect of kedusha or being mitaher the yadayim from a tumah. Sover mina chovahu deleka ha mitzvahika. They wanted to infer from this statement of Rabbi Lazar in the name of Rabbi Shaya that it's not an obligation, but it's still a mitzvah. So amalu rava lo chova lo mitzvah. You don't have to read it that way. He's not suggesting that it's an obligation. He's also not suggesting that it's a mitzvah. El rishut, it's completely optional, but it's a suggested idea because washing one's hands is sanitary, and therefore it's a good idea to do it, but there's no obligation to do that. That means both from the tzad mitzvah, the chachamim didn't impose or insist that you do it. Neither is it a chovah, obligatory because of some danger that is involved, but rather it's optional, but well suggested that one does such for nikiyut. Upligei de Rav Nachman, and it argues on Rav Nachman, Damar Rav Nachman, will tell you a double the peirot, enu ela migasei ruach. Rav Nachman specifically says you may not wash your hands for peirot, because then it's someone who is gas ruach, so haughty. Because it's not required, it looks like this person is doing what's called extra prishut. He's like a super duper zealous person that washes his hands unnecessarily for peirot, and that's not an acceptable form of behavior. It's really something that's so far afield that it's not even an option available to you, because as Rashi says over here, that asur lenhogat tzmo begasut haruach, one can't act in such a haughty manner. And since this is so far afield, anybody who does this is drawing attention to themselves, trying to demonstrate that they are makpid on some far-fetched type of chashash, or washing one's hands in situations where they don't need to in order to show that they're so tahor. And that's not acceptable type of behavior. It's so far off the mainstream that we're going to say that people who do this aren't doing it with the right intentions. They're only doing it to draw attention to themselves or to imply that they hold of some higher level of tahara. So Amar Rabba Bar Chana, Abba Kamina Kameh de Rabbi Ami Rabbi Asi. Rabba Bar Chana says, I was present in front of Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi, who are obviously older in Rebbeim. Aitu de Kamayu Kalkala de Peire. They brought a basket full of fruits to them, Bachalu, and they ate that basket full of fruits. Velo Mashu Yudayu. They did not wash their hands. Velo Yavali Mide. And they didn't give me any of the fruits that were found there. Ubarich Chad Chad Luchude. When it came to making a bracha chrona, they broke up, and each one made their own bracha. Shma mina plat. From this, you can conclude three things over here. Shma mina ein yitelat yadayim neperot. First thing is, the fact they didn't wash their hands for eating fruits corroborates what we saw before, that one doesn't have to wash their hands for fruit. And maybe even it corroborates the statement of Rav Nachman that it's not necessary at all. It's not even an option, because over here they intentionally did not wash their hands. Shma mina ein mizamnin ala peirot. Number two is, when you eat fruits, there's no necessity for a zimun afterwards, because if there was a necessity for a zimun, then they should have given Rabba Bar Chana fruit to share with them, and then they would have been three, and if they were three, then they could make a zimun. So since they didn't do that and include Rabba Bar Chana, that shows you that even had they included Rabba Bar Chana, you still wouldn't result in having a zimun. Shma mina, shnaim shachlu, mitzvah lechalik. And the last thing that we learn from this is, when two people eat together, it's a mitzvah to break up and to each one of them say their bracha achrona, or to bench alone. Normally, and in their day, the practice was that when they had a group of individuals eating together, one person would bench on behalf of everyone. That was the idea of the zimun. The person who led the zimun not only made the zimun in the beginning and said the zimun out loud, but he said the entire benching out loud, and everyone else listened and was yotze with his birkat hamazon. What we're saying over here is that you only can do that when you have a zimun. When you're less than a zimun, then one of the two individuals can't bench on behalf of the other party. They each need to bench on their own. That's what it means, mitzvah lechalik. They should divide up, separate out, and do their own birkat hamazon, or bracha achrona in this case. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a braita that supports that contention. Shnaim shachlu, mitzvah lechalik. Two people eat together, it's a mitzvah to break up. Bamed v'imomorim sheyushneim sofrim. That's in a case where both of them are educated and literate, so they can both bench on their own. So therefore, it makes sense that they have to bench on their own. About echad sofer v'echad bur, if one of them is literate and the other one is not, sofer mevarech ubor yotzei. Since the boor can't bench for himself, therefore he needs the educated individual to do it on his behalf. In that instance, it's going to work because it's a matter of necessity. And if you don't allow it, he won't be able to bench. Now, Tosfot over here asks a question which then parlays into a much longer diyun in the Tosfot, which is, Tema, how do you know over here it's mitzvah lechalek? How do you know that you must break up when it comes to benching and each person bench or say a bracha achrona themselves rather than say reshut? It could be that it's optional and they just chose not to bench together, but had they wanted to, they could have benched, they could have said the bracha achrona together. How do you know that it's a mitzvah and not a reshut? So that question then leads Tosfot to try to understand what is the chiddush in the three different Shema Minas over here that are found in the Gemara. And he goes through each one of them explaining how each one of them adds on an additional piece of information or a particular chiddush that would not be apparent from one of the other instances or Shema Minas that was there. So the first Shema Minah that says, Ein mezamnin ala peirot, simply tells you that there's no obligation to do a zimun ala peirot. But it doesn't tell you that if you want to opt in, or you choose to do so, whether it's with pot or whether it's peirot with two people, maybe you can do a zimun. That's what the second statement comes along to say, was that they broke up into two. So that shows you that mitzvah lechalek, which means that you may not use nivarech she'achal mishalo. Zimun is not applicable at all with regards to two individuals, whether it's with peirot or whether it's with pot. And then it still is possible that one could be motzi the other one. And that's what the Tanya Nami Hochi comes to tell you, that not only is it that you can't do zimun when you have the two individuals and you should split up, but even two individuals should not be benching to help each other out. Each one should bench individually. And in that way, you get the progression to what that final conclusion is, that it is actually an obligation to split up, not only to split up and not have a zimun, it's also to split up and not allow one individual to bench on behalf of the other individual. Then Tosfot goes on to ask a separate halachic question, which is, how come at the end of the meal, we force everybody to say their own bracha achrona, but when it comes to the beginning of the meal, we always have one person that makes a bracha on behalf of everyone else? Why is it so obvious that in the beginning of the meal, no matter how many participants there are, one person makes a bracha on behalf of everyone else, whereas when it comes to the end of the meal, then it depends on whether you have a zimun or not as to whether we let you make one bracha for everyone, or whether you have to bench or say the brachot separately? So he brings the first answer, V'yesh lamar, the shiny bracha de lechatchila, that bracha before one eats is different, shekein kol echad marviach boto bracha. Everybody benefits from that bracha, shekein mutarim lechol. Through that bracha, each one of them then has access to the food and is allowed to eat, lehanot, and to get benefit. Lefikach mistarfim la. Therefore, you can join together with that bracha and v'yotze with his bracha. Abasov shekvar achulu lo mitstarfim. In the end, where they were already eaten, the bracha is not a bracha of birkat hanenin, but rather a birkat shevach v'hoda'a. And therefore, it's different, meaning that only a birkat hanenin can you share with someone else, and one person can be motzi other people because you'll share in the fact that you're about to get benefit from it. And that's enough to bring you together, aggregate you into a single unit, that whereby one person can make the bracha on behalf of everyone else. In the case of benching of the bracha achrona, where it's either a birkat shevach or birkat hoda'a, over there isn't something that automatically unifies you. If you have a zimun, then there's something that binds you together, brings you together, and one person can make a bracha on behalf of everyone else. In a case where there is no unifying force of a zimun, there's also not the unifying force of hana'a, and therefore each person has to do their own birkat shevach v'hoda'a. They can't be mitztaref, joined together to have one be motzi the others. And then Tosfot says, if that's the practice that's found in the Gemara, and it's accepted by everyone, how come that's not our practice today, that one individual makes a bracha rishona on behalf of others? The only time we do it is normally on Shabbat, but we have bread where one person makes a bracha on behalf of others, but other than that, we really don't exercise this din. That's because we do not sit down to a formal meal except for bread. We don't do it on things like wine and on fruits because we consider those to be a snackier element and not something that is a su'udah. This is matched up with a Tosafot that's found in the Gemara in Brachot and Daf Membet, where a Tosafot over there says that our yeshiva today, our sitting around the table, is the equivalent of Heseba in the time of the Gemara. Because we no longer do Heseba all the time. The Gemara suggests that Heseba makes or unifies the parties that are eating together. Also, it says we no longer do Heseba today. For us, the equivalent is Yeshiva. Sitting around a table is the equivalent of Heseba in that time. And then what Tosafot says is that we only sit around a table and break bread together when we're having bread. But if one is eating fruit or one is eating wine, we don't create that kviut. And that's the difference. For bread, where we create that same kviut that they had in the time of the Gemara, there we make one bracha on behalf of everyone, because there's a certain amount of unifying force in sitting around the table together that allows one to make a bracha on behalf of the others. That doesn't exist by peirot and yayin in our day, but in their day, even for those items, they used to do haseba, which for us would mean that we do yeshiva around the shulchan. They did that in their day. They did do haseba. We don't do that yeshiva around the shulchan. And therefore, we don't have a kviyut to allow one person to make a bracha on behalf of the others. Even though there would be a benefit of Barovam Hadrat Melech to have one make the bracha on behalf of others. The end of that Tosafot and the Gemara Brachot then says that for being motzi people by a bracha, you need that yeshiva. And therefore, for things like Havdalah, one would need to sit around the table in order for one person to be motzi other individuals in that scenario, because that's what creates the unifying force, the equivalent of Haseba in the time of the Gemara. And that then leads to the preferable halachic way to do Havdalah is seated around a table altogether and not standing up. So now the Gemara continues with regards to Netilat Yadayim Rishonim, which is Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Beraita. Netilat Yadayim Lechulin Adaperek. Washing one's hands for chulin is until the joint. Ule truma, for washing one's hands for truma, ad aperek, is till the joint. Kiddush yadayim v'raglayim b'migdash, washing one's hands and feet in the migdash, ad aperek, is until the joint. V'chol davar shechutzeitz b'tfilah b'guf, chutzeitz b'ntilat yadayim l'chulin, u'b'kiddush yadayim v'raglayim b'migdash. Anything that would consider a chatzitza when you go to the mikveh on your body, then that same item would be a problematic when one washes their hands, both for chulin and for the kedusha of kiddush yadayim raglayim in the mikdash. And so therefore you have to be makpid or careful that when one washes their hands, that there's nothing on their hands that blocks the water and creates a chatzitza. Tosafot does bring from the Rebbe Avram that the Tosefta seems to indicate that with regards to chulin, there is no issue of chatzitza. And therefore, Tosafot over here says, Yesh lamar, the hoch ayri l'achila. When it comes to eating, they were more makpid with regards to washing yadayim, that it has the same rules as mikveh vis-a-vis chatzitza. But over there in the Tosefta, it's speaking about nigia, just touching. In order to cleanse your hands from touching things, there we don't worry about chatzitza. But we're more machmir with regards to issues of achila than we are with nigia. And then the Tosafot ends off, you have to be careful when you wash one's hands that you make sure that there's no dirt or dough that is caught under the fingernails of the individual, the chotzitzim b'tvila, because they cause a problem when it comes to tvila. Aval, in cases that you have a miut, she'enu makpid, it's something very small, it doesn't cover the majority of the hand, and you're not makpid, you don't care that it's there, then just like by the mikveh that doesn't cause a chatzitza, so too by the yadayim, it doesn't cause a chatzitza. So it's a miut, she'enu makpid, over there you don't have to worry about washing your hands with that item there. If it's either a robe, or it is something that you're makpid on, or something that you would otherwise remove, then you have to remove the item so that it's not a chatzitza for yadayim. That's why one has to be careful if their hands are dirty, or there's stickiness or other things on the hands when they go to wash ma'im rishonim. They should wash their hands properly for nikiyut, cleanse the hands, make sure there are no chatzitzot, clean the nails, and then issues with regards to rings, which depends on how one treats their rings on a regular basis, then in those instances, you'd have to remove all those items and cleanse the hands before you wash ma'im rishonim, because the requirements are similar to that of a mikveh, where chatzitza is a problem. Now, the first part of the braita that we brought is somewhat cryptic, because it says, each one of these items requires washing until a joint. Rashi explains it as referencing to different joints along the way, which is that for chulin, you have to wash until the perek hasheni, to the second joint on the finger. And that's because, as Tosafot points out, that that's the only common joint between all the different fingers. That's because all the fingers have three joints. There's the joint by the fingernail, there's a joint in the middle of the finger, and there's a joint that attaches the finger to the hand itself. On the thumb, on the other hand, it's missing that first joint that's up by the fingernail. There's only a middle joint and then a joint that joins it to the hand. And therefore, Rashi says the first joint that's common to all the fingers is the second joint on the fingers, which is the first joint for the thumb. That joint is where you need to wash your hands up until for chulin. Then, when it says ad aperek by truma, it's adding on an additional joint. which means the chumata perek means the perek hashlishi, the third joint that's on the gavayad, which is on the back of the hand, or is in essence the joint that attaches the fingers to the hand itself or the knuckles of the individual. That's how far you have to wash for truma. And then it adds on for kiddush yadayim reglayim b'migdash. Then you have to go another perek, another joint up, which is the joint between the hand and the forearm, which in other words is the wrist, that you need to wash all the way up to the wrist for kiddush yadayim reglayim b'migdash. So here you have the three different areas where you need to wash up to the second joint on the fingers, which is equivalent to the first joint on the thumb for chulin, up to the joints that attach the fingers to the hand for chuma, and then all the way up to the wrist when you're doing kiddush yadayim reglayim for the migdash. Therefore, according to Rashi, in order to do mayim rishonim, you only have to do it in the areas of the hand that are towards the very tip of the fingers. So I'm a Rav. Ad kan l'chulin, ad kan l'chuma. Rav was demonstrating to his students and showing them that until here, where you need to wash for chulin. Until here is where you wash for chuma. Shmuel amar, ad kan ben l'chulin ben l'chuma, l'chumra. Shmuel indicated to his students through showing them that they need to wash their hand up to here, both for chulin and both for chuma, l'chumra. To the tzad chumra means that he required you to wash both for chulin and chuma, all the way up to your knuckles, all the way up to the point of the fingers attaching to the wrist. But we acknowledge that it's a chumra and not something that's mi'ikar adin. Rav Sheshet amar ad kan ben l'chulin ben l'chuma l'kula. On the other hand, Rav Sheshet says that you have to wash for chulin and chuma ad kan until here, which is the second joint on the finger, the first joint on the thumb. That's where you have to wash for chulin. And similarly for chuma, that's where you can wash too. You do not require washing all the way up to the knuckles for chuma. Then they have a story, which is amar bar hadaya hava kamina kamei de Rabbi Yami. I was present in front of Rabbi Yami, Bamar, and I saw him say, Ad kan ben l'chulin ben l'chuma, until here you wash for chulin and chuma, the chumra, similar to what Shmuel had said. Velo teima, and don't tell me, Rabbi Yami mishum de kohen hu, that because Rabbi Yami was a kohen, that he was makbid on that, because since he had to wash up to his knuckles for chuma, he was makbid that all the times that he washed, even for chulin, he washed all the way up to his knuckles. Don't tell me that's the reason why Rabbi Yami did this. Because the Rabbi Maisha barbered the Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who Levi, because Rabbi Maisha, the grandson of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, happens to be a Levi, ve'amar, and he had the same opinion as Rabbi Ami, ad kan ben l'chulim ben l'chuma l'chumra. He had that same view as Rabbi Ami and as Shmuel, and therefore you can see that it's not correlated with somebody being a Kohen that they make that requirement. Even a Levi, who's not eating truma, still has that same requirement, l'chumra, to wash both for chulin and truma up until the knuckles. Now, the Baal Yatosafot over here present an issue with regards to Rav Sheshet's opinion. Now, according to Shmuel, Rabbi Ami, and Rabbi Meisha, all of whom said the Chumrah, you wash both for Chulin and Shumah, all the way up to the knuckles, in Rashi's explanation, their positions are understandable. They're not arguing on the Braita that they brought. They're just simply saying that the practice, the Chumrah, even though the Braita would allow you to wash up to the second joint for Chulin, and then to the third joint for Shumah, they were makbid even for chulin to wash all the way up to the third joint or up to the knuckles. But that's just a chumra that's overlaid on the braita. Tosfot also mentions that Shmuel, because he was a kohen as well, was makbid similar to Rabbi Ami, and says that their hakpada did come from the fact that they were a kohanim, but again, it was a chumra that they kept, and not something that argues necessarily on the braita. The real problem comes from Sheshet's opinion, which is Rav Sheshet, who's an Amora now, is arguing on the braita. He's saying that for both chulin and truma, you can wash lekula. The kula means that you can wash up to that second joint. Now, if the braita tells you truma, you need to wash all the way up to the knuckles to the third joint, how can Rav Sheshet come along and say you only have to wash up to the second joint for truma? That makes it that Rav Sheshet is actually arguing on the braita. And so therefore, Tosfot says, according to that explanation of Rashi, what you have to say is that Rav Sheshet understood the braita differently than the other Amoraim. The other Amoraim understood the braita like Rashi, which is the first parak that we're mentioning here is the second joint on the finger. And then we move to the knuckles and then to the wrist. On the other hand, Rav Sheshet understood the braita to be saying that the first joint is for chulin, the second joint for truma. The third joint is where the fingers attach to the hand. That was the requirement by Kodesh for washing their hands. And when it says that Rav Sheshet was the kula, it wasn't that he's a kula vis-a-vis the braita, like we reviewed the word chumra for the other Amoraim vis-a-vis the braita. Rather, it was a kula vis-a-vis the other Amoraim. Because for the other Amoraim who have the starting joint be the second joint and the finger, their explanation of the Braita turns out to be much more stringent than Rav Sheshet's reading of the Braita, who says that the first joint is the beginning of the Braita, not the second joint. That's how you can explain Rav Sheshet's view without it being in contradiction to the Braita. The problem that the Baal Yetzer Tosfot faced then is that Rabbeinu Tam, the Chulin beperek Rishon, that Rabbeinu Tam, on the other hand, views that the Braita should be read the way that Rav Sheshet did, and that's the real reading of the Braita. He disagrees with Rashi and says that the Braita means the first joint on the fingers is for Chulin, then second joint is for Truma, and the third joint, which attaches the fingers to the hand, that's where you have to wash up to for Kodesh. But given that, then you have a problem for Rav Sheshet's view, because now, how is Rav Sheshet not arguing on the Braita if there's no alternative view of how Rav Sheshet can explain the Braita? For Rashi, Rav Sheshet can have an alternate view on how to explain the Braita, and that's how he is the Kula. But for Rabbeinu Tam already takes up that Kula by all the Amoraim, then what is Rav Sheshet saying that doesn't have him arguing on the Braita? So then he has to come up with different ways to suggest how the other Amoraim are the Chumra, and Rav Sheshet, in contrast to them, is the Kula, while still upholding the view of the Braita and not arguing on the Braita. But then Tosfos goes out of his way to say that for sure, the explanation here is not like Rabbi Avram. It might be like Rashi, it might be like the Rabbeinu Tam, but it's certainly not like the Rabbeinu Avram, which the Tosfos bring more extensively in the Gemara in Arachin, whereby Rabbi Avram says that washing for Chulin is until the third joint, which is the knuckles. For Truma is all the way for the hand up to the wrist. And then for Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim in the Mikdash is all the way up to the elbow. And he brings a proof to his position because the Sefer Zahir says that Shmuel says you have to wash your hands all the way up to the wrist. And we already saw that Shmuel was equating Chulin and Truma, which means that he thinks that Truma is up to the wrist and not up to the knuckles. And therefore, based on that, he comes to this conclusion that the Chulin is until the knuckles, Truma is until the wrist, and then for Kodesh, it's all the way up to the elbow. Tosfot over here says that that's definitely not the right explanation over here. He says, V'ef Sharlo Markein, it's impossible to view it that way. Brings numerous proofs to the fact that you cannot explain that the yad, or the hand, references to the forearm of the individual, but rather only to the hand up to the wrist. And therefore, this Braita can only be speaking about joints that are from the first joint of the finger all the way to the wrist, and not beyond the wrist, in terms of what's considered or classified as a yad. And he shows how the bone that is from the wrist until the elbow is not called the yad anymore, but rather the kaneh, and that the bone from the elbow until the shoulder is called the zuroa. And the Rabbeinu Tam is adamant about the fact that the kiborit is the bicep, and also the fact that the elbow is known as the marpek or the atzil, and that is not considered to be a part of the hand. The hand only starts from the wrist out to the fingers, and therefore the explanation of the Rabbi Avram is not acceptable with regards to Ntilat Yadayim. Now, in truth, this position of the Rabbi Avram is not just his position, but also the position, as the Bar Halacha says, of the Rabbeinu Hananel, the Rif, the Rambam, the Aruch, the Smag, the Rashba. All of them have that same position as the Rabbi Avram, and they think that the Yerushalmi backs up that position. And the Or Zarua is also machmir for this position of the Rabbi Avram. So if you put all of that together, the halacha, we're going to lean towards those Rishonim against this view of Rashi and the Baalei HaTosafot. The Shulchan Aruch brings down both positions and says, V'ra'ui l'ho k'data Rishon, that it's proper and appropriate to be noeg like the position that says that you wash up to the wrist. And that means that if we subscribe to Shmuel's position, the Chumra, that means for Netiyat Yadayim, we're going to wash all the way up to the wrist, both for Chulin and Truma. And so that is the common practice when one washes Yadayim, that they wash all the way up to the wrist. But this does have a nafka mina when it comes to days like Yom HaKippurim and Tisha B'Av, where there is an Easter Rechitza on the individual. Because since there is permission to wash on those days for dirt or for Tum'a, not for anything that is pleasure beyond the points where you need to. And therefore, when it comes to those days, we only wash Yadayim up until the point of where the fingers attach to the hand, like the Chumrah of Shmuel, because of the day of Rashi and the Baalei HaTosafot, the Kula. So there we know for sure is where you have to wash up to. Anything beyond that is a Chumrah or a Chashash for the other Rishonim. And therefore, on those days, we will only wash Yadayim up until the knuckles, whereas on a regular day, we would wash Yadayim all the way up to the wrist, and that's both for Negavasar, as well as for individuals who are going to be eating on that day, for whatever reason, they would wash only up to the knuckles and not all the way up to the wrist. And I'll send out pictures and mikorot with regards to Mayim Rishonim in this matter. Now, Amar Rav, Notel Adam et Shtei Yadav Shacharit, Umatna Lehem Kol Yom Kulo. First can wash his hands in the morning, and on condition that he'll eat with the washing all day long. And so Rashi says over here, Uvad Shizeher Melatan Fam Ulamitamam. As long as he's careful and aware of the fact that he doesn't get them dirty during the day, and he doesn't make them tamei. Both of the reasons that we discussed before for Netilat Yadayim, both for Nikiyut and for Kedusha. So in order to use that Netilat Yadayim from Shacharit, one has to be sure that they're not going to be Mesiach Tat from that Netilat Yadayim Shacharit. But if they do that Netilat Yadayim Shacharit and state that they want to use that all day, then as long as they're Makpid to guard their hands all day, then that one washing in the morning will suffice. Amalo Rabbi Avina Libnei Pakta Darvot. So Rabbi Avina said to these individuals who used to work in this open field or valley, Kugonatun, Deloshlichu Mayo, for you guys where there's no water found where you're working all day, Mashi Udayu Mitzafra, should wash your hands in the morning, Vaatanu Alayu, and make a tnai or condition it, the Kulayoma, that you're going to use it all day. Igadamre Bishchat Adchakin, the permissibility of using such a structure is only when it is difficult or there's not going to be any water found during the day. Shalo Kishat Achak, lo. On the other hand, when it's not necessary, then you can't use it. Upliga de Rav, and this argues on what we saw from Rav before, because Rav says you can use it anytime. It's not only a case where it's a necessity, even if you just choose to do it, you have the right to do it. Bika Damre, and some say that this permissibility that is being mentioned by Rabbi Avina is not only Bishat Adachak, but even Afilu Shalo Bishat Adachak Nami, even if it wasn't an emergency or a situation in which you will not have water for the remainder of the day, behind the Rav. And that's in concert what we saw from Rav. And Tosfot over here, it says he doesn't really understand the Gemara over here, because the Gemara in Arvei Psachim says that one should not wash their hands before Kiddush, because the Kiddush will be a hefsek between the Netilat Yadayim and the eating of the food. So how come over here you can wash in the morning and go about your daily activities and not worry about it, yet when it comes to Kiddush, we don't let you wash before Kiddush because of the hefsek of Kiddush. But Omer Rabbeinu Tam, in order to resolve this, Tahani Mile Kishimatne Shacharit. Over here, the difference is he made a Tanai. When you make a Tanai, it works. Over there by Kiddush, the person wasn't making a Tanai, and that's why it doesn't work. Vod Yesh Lomar, and he offers another alternative, which is Dafa Gav de Mu'il, Tanai, the Rav, Apshalo B'Shat Atchak. Even though Rav says that the condition over here works, even if it's not an emergency situation, but nevertheless, it's a time where you're not going to have easy access to water. So it may not be a shat adchak, but it's still a difficulty in washing your hands later in the day because water is not going to be readily available. You're going to have to travel. You're going to have to do a large undertaking to get to the water. And maybe that's the time where Rav permits this. In a case where the water's right there, we're not going to permit it. Or it's a case where he has water, but he needs the water for drinking or needs it for other purposes. And therefore, the water is not easily accessible to him. The Baal Tosafot try to limit the scope of this heter of Rav because of the problem with the Gemara in Arvei Psachim, and to start to suggest that Rav, even though he says it, as the Gemara says here, despite the fact that there's no Shat HaDachak, but it's not simply a case where water is readily accessible to you. It's something in between a Shat HaDachak and water being readily available to you. When water is readily available to you, you can't use the suggestion of Rav. Where there's no water, it's a Shat HaDachak. Everybody agrees you can make this tonight. The question is, in the in-between case where water is available but not easily available, but it's not a shat adchak, over there can you use this system for washing? Rav says yes, and we have the possibility in the two ikadamres as to whether they agree or disagree with Rav's position over there, but the Baal Tosafot are unwilling to say that this should be a regular manifestation or way to do the washing. And the truth is that it could be that the difference between them is that by the case of Kiddush, one washes their hands and does not eat immediately. Instead of eating immediately, they go to Kiddush and then only eat afterwards. In the case of Rav's Tanai, it might be when they wash their hands, they made a Tanai to use it all day, but then they eat immediately and then continue to eat based on that for the remainder of the day. But at least in the beginning of the day, there was an eating or something that was somoch l'netilat yadayim, which permits the netilat yadayim for the whole day. All right, we're going to stop here. 5 lines down on the top of Kuv Zayin Amud Aleph.